the lecture on Christian Science from Fifth Church of Christ Scientist, New York City.
Christian Science reveals God as a very present help. Our speaker is a member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts. We know you are eager to hear Otto G. Ziegenhagen of Chicago, Illinois. Mr. Ziegenhagen?
Thank you, Mrs. Bayless. Good evening, my friends. In order to solve any problem, we need to acquaint ourselves with the fundamental facts or truths concerning it. There is one right answer to any problem, and it cannot be honestly obtained by ignorance or guesswork. This certainly applies to the working out of our salvation, as Christ Jesus so plainly expressed it in his statement, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." There are many who know very little about Christian Science, although it is steadily growing in recognition throughout the world. Some mistakenly think that Christian Science is an application of the human mind to change a situation at will. People say, for instance, "Oh, you're not sick, just forget about it. Or if you want money or anything else, just think it." Let me tell you of an experience that took place during World War II when a friend who was active in the field of Christian Science was traveling on one of our trains. It was during meat rationing times. And at noon, he went into the club car and asked the porter to fix a little lunch. He said, "I'd like some scrambled eggs, buttered toast, and some nice crisp bacon." The porter replied, "I can give you the eggs and I can give you the toast. But as for the bacon, you'll have to use Christian Science." No, my friends, the demonstration of Christian Science is not a question of getting material things. It is the effect of realizing the fundamental facts of God and His creation. We can no more expect to receive God's help without understanding Him in His true light than we can expect to receive help from the principle of mathematics without understanding it. The discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, says in the textbook, "Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures," it is our ignorance of God, the divine principle, which produces apparent discord, and the right understanding of Him restores harmony. Christian Science brings you that right understanding of God now. Is not the truth of God and man always present? And if so, is there actually any error present to contradict this truth? In the Bible, in the book of Psalms, we read, "God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble." The psalmist certainly encouraged himself to trust in God, even in the face of adversity. Such trust brings proof to one that where trouble may suggest itself to be, the understanding of God's ever-present help eliminates it. Now the question may arise, how Can I eliminate an error or trouble that is confronting me? Do I merely have to ask God to take it away? The only right answer is to realize the spiritual fact that error is nothing because God did not create it, and to replace the lie with the truth. Thus we prove that God is a very present help. This realization is prayer, and Christian Science prayer includes knowing the truth of God and His universe, which brings us under the government of divine love. Job plainly defines prayer in these words: acquaint now thyself with Him and be at peace, thereby good shall come unto thee. Some time ago, when I was engaged in another profession, I had in my employ a young woman who had much trouble in making her living. When she came to the office one morning, she seemed terribly depressed. She told me that she had been faithfully attending her church of another denomination, and that morning, when praying, someone next to her emptied her pocketbook of every penny that she had. I asked her what prayer was, and she replied, "Prayer means asking God for something that you want." I asked her to repeat it, which she did, with not too much thought. Then I put this question to her: "You mean that you ask God for something you want?" She paused momentarily and then exclaimed, "Of course, it isn't what I want. It is what God wants." From that time on, she seemed like a newborn individual, expressing much joy. And she became prosperous in a delightful way. She had found the right approach to prayer. In order to benefit from prayer, we must acquaint ourselves with God. And this involves a willingness to surrender our misconceptions of Him. In the textbook, Mrs. Eddy gives the following definition: God, the great I am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence." When we think of God in this light, we see the infinitude of His true nature. Unless we know God as infinite, we cannot expect the blessings of an all-wise and an all-loving mind. There's no way to know God except to entertain thoughts that emanate from Him, from mind, truth, love. Any attempt to see God in a finite way, that is to humanly circumscribe deity, is to hinder progress. In the Gospel of John we read, "No man hath seen God at any time." Here it is quite plain that we can never see God nor become cognizant of His goodness through the physical senses. As the psalmist says, Be still and know that I am God. Let us think for a moment about the presence of truth, where it is, and what it is doing. And you will soon find that truth is everywhere, always operating, that is, always expressing itself. The whole expression of truth is the likeness of God, and the likeness of God is perfect man. In the Bible, we read, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him." This is the real man, the perfect man, who is forever inseparable from his creator. The materially outlined form called man is a misrepresentation of God's image, and actually has no abiding place in the infinite realm of spirit. Then how are we going to free ourselves from this matter world, this world of chaos and discord? Paul gives us excellent advice in his letter to the Romans. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The mind that is to be renewed and transformed is the human consciousness, which is a mental state wherein both right and wrong thinking appear. This dual state of thought is suggested in the Adam allegory, when the forbidden fruit was eaten, the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Spiritual sense alone can discern God as spirit. It is not difficult to perceive God as spirit if we will allow ourselves to become conscious of truth and love, for they have no finite outline. No one can draw a picture of truth or photograph love, because they are infinite spirit. We can never see spirit with our eyes, but we can discern it through spiritual sense when we become conscious of a motivating power that governs all right activity. Spirit is that which gives renewed impetus to right thought and desire, elevating them higher expressions of good. Sometimes people say, but it is so difficult to know God as spirit. This need not be so. Even little children can understand spirit in some measure. Let me tell you of a conversation I had with a little boy who attends the Christian Science Sunday School. When he was asked to define God, he replied, "God is spirit." He paused momentarily and with sincere thought continued, "Spirit is infinite." I thought it was rather unusual for a four-year-old to speak of God in this way. When he was asked if he could see spirit with his eyes, he said, "No." "Can you feel spirit with your hands?" Again he replied in the negative and added, "But you can feel spirit because it makes you do good things and it makes you feel joyous." What the child glimpsed was the ever-presence of God as infinite spirit. The Christ, truth, reveals God to be infinite mind, the only creator, and man to be his perfect reflection. God being spirit, then his reflection must be spiritual, without human outline. When we think of this true reflection, let us not think in terms of materially outlined reflections, where the reflection is outside of the subject it reflects. God being infinite, then his reflection must be in him. Therefore, God encompasses his reflection, even as truth embraces the expression of itself. Wherever God is, man is there too, for there is no place where man does not reflect God. Seeing then that man reflects God, who is infinite, we conclude that there can be no room for anything finite or material to attach itself to man. In the light of this true reflection, we see the inseparability of God and man. We can never separate truth from its own expression. Each of us as an individual consciousness reflects infinite mind. I should like to repeat that. Each of us as an individual spiritual consciousness reflects infinite mind. But an individual idea is not the entire reflection of God. All of mind's ideas together exist as the full expression of God. In other words, all conscious individual ideas collectively constitute the full representation or manifestation of God. In reference to Jesus' words, "I and my Father are one," Mrs. Eddy explains in the textbook that this means one in quality, not in quantity. When we become conscious of God's expression, his true reflection, the divine idea, and apply this truth to human experience, this results in Christian Science healing. Let me tell you of an experience that a young naval officer had during World War II. While he was out at sea, he was badly burned when he saved his ship by putting out a fire. He was rushed to the mainland, where the Christian Science wartime minister called on him early the next morning and found him almost entirely swathed in gauze. The conversation that followed included declarations of perfect God and perfect man. The thought was emphasized that there was never any degree of temperature in God, that only the atmosphere of divine love prevailed at all times. The Bible account was related of the three Hebrew boys cast into the burning, fiery furnace, where there appeared the form of the fourth, like the Son of God. The Christ was seen as always present to save mankind from any form of disaster. It was recognized that the young man's true identity, revealed by Christ, truth, was never touched by consuming heat, no, not even the smell of fire. On the fourth day, all evidence of burns about the face had vanished. On the eighth day, the doctor in charge of the case was asked when the officer would be released. His reply was, "That would be difficult to determine now, but we're still contemplating surgery. Skin grafts seem very necessary." This possibility was mentally rejected, and the truth realized that nothing could be taken from man and nothing could be added to him. The very next morning, the young officer was released from the hospital, completely free from any evidence of burns. His shipmate, who had shared this experience with him, was also freed. And this is in line with what Mrs. A. writes in one of her books, "The demonstration of Christianity blesses all mankind." In the experience just related is concrete evidence that spiritual power supersedes material sense testimony. You see, my friends, as the true reflection of God, divine love dawns upon consciousness, the discordant picture dissipates as a shadow before the rays of light. The real man, truth's reflection, is present here and now, even where the material sense of man seems to be. This fact realized reveals the healing power of God to be ever present. Right here, right now, human concepts of time can never change God's eternal day, but tend to hinder mankind's progress by making them hang on to the past or fear the future. All true being, all real existence, can be expressed only in terms of the eternal present. When we become conscious of God and of His infinite universe, we are eliminating the barriers of time. An old proverb says, "Time waits for no man," but Christian Science says, "Eternity is ever present." The opening lines of the preface to Science and Health read, "To those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings. Here is your present help, whether it be for sickness or sin or a business problem, incompatibility at home or at the office, fear about yourself or some dear one, or any other discord. Do not delay in taking your problem to God now." Hear what Paul says about this. "Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." In reality, there is no past and there is no future. What are termed past and future are elements of time which can never be found in eternity, in spiritual reality. Eternity is God's day, the forever present, which is, not was, or will be. Thinking about the past with regrets is not going to correct the present situation. Likewise, to be anxiously concerned about the future is not going to accomplish anything now. To recognize the omnipresence of God, good, and His eternal day is to break the false sense of time, which involves a material sense existence, that which has a beginning and an end. How much more clearly this can be seen when we grasp what Mrs. Eddy writes in her definition of day in the textbook. Part of it reads, "The objects of time and sense disappear in the illumination of spiritual understanding, and mind measures time according to the good that is unfolding. This unfolding is God's day, and there shall be no night there." Whenever we turn to the Father in conscientious prayer, we do so in recognition of His eternal presence. This brings into focus the oneness and allness of life, truth, and love, and brings evidence of mind's infinite creation, showing the nothingness of finite material beliefs. We do not petition God to help us in the past, nor should we think that His blessings can come to us only in the future. It is now that we commune with Him, and in so doing, the regrets, fears, and disappointments in regard to the past are dissipated, and the uncertainties, anxieties, mental pressures, and false responsibilities about the future are eliminated. If we go to God in prayer, but are not expecting His help immediately, thinking perhaps that the healing will come sometime in the future, our prayer is not scientific. Where would we be in arithmetic if we turned to the principle and declared that 2 + 2 = 4, and then exclaimed, "Of course, we can't have that answer right now, but perhaps a little later, maybe tomorrow or the next day, we just know that it will come." We know reasonably well that when we turn to the principle and are obedient to its laws, the right answer is ever at hand. So it is when we turn to the one God, the only Creator, divine mind, and then yield to His laws, the right answer is always at hand. God's work is complete. It is whole. It is like Him. In this light, we can always expect an immediate, an instantaneous healing. In the Bible, in the book of Genesis, we read, "And God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good." It is from this basis that Christian scientists are taught to pray, to realize the oneness, the allness of God and His perfect creation, which He beheld to be very good. Here we have perfect God and perfect man. This is important to know. Whenever we turn to the Father in conscientious prayer, always work from perfection and not towards it. I should like to repeat that. Whenever we turn to the Father in conscientious prayer, always work from perfection and not towards it. For this is the way the Master prayed in his own words. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. Perfect God and perfect man. Right here. Right now. I feel quite certain that to those who had gone to the Master for healing, his reply was not this: I will pray for you, and you can expect to get better. You contact me in a day or two, and we'll just know that everything will be all right. I'm Mary. He turned to the one God, the one mind, divine truth, and realized man's inseparability from him. This always resulted in an instantaneous healing. This healing is ever available to all who turn to the Christ, God's living truth. This is what the Master did. He always turned to the Christ instead of accepting the material sense testimony. And this enabled him always to heal instantaneously. All of his healings were consummated in terms of now. To recall a few of those instantaneous healings, the man with the withered hand, stretch forth thy hand. The palsied man, thy sins be forgiven thee. The widow's son, dead at the gate of Nain. Young man, I say unto thee, arise. And to his dearly beloved friend, who lay in the grave 4 days, Lazarus, come forth. This healing power of the Christ truth is available to all right here. Right now, for centuries, the followers of Christianity have been taught that Christ and Jesus are one and the same in nature and in identity. But how can this actually be so if, according to the physical sense testimony, we can never become cognizant of Jesus? Yet through spiritual discernment, we can become conscious of the Christ. Jesus always turned to the Christ truth instead of accepting the physical sense testimony. And this gave him, rightfully so, the divine title of Jesus the Christ, or Christ Jesus. Mrs. Eddy talks about this in Science and Health. She says, Christ is the ideal truth that comes to heal sickness and sin through Christian Science, and attributes all power to God. Jesus is the name of the man who, more than all other men, hath presented Christ, the true idea of God, healing the sick and the sinning, and destroying the power of death. Jesus is the human man, and Christ is the divine idea. Hence, the duality of Jesus, the Christ. All those who turn to the Christ, which is God's living truth, may work out their own salvation right here, right now. Let me tell you of an experience that took place several years ago. A woman was so badly afflicted with arthritis that her limbs and joints had assumed unnatural proportions. The doctors who attended her said that she would never recover. During her earlier years, she had been somewhat interested in Christian Science, but had never pursued it in any serious way. But she realized right then and there that she needed to turn to a power higher than any thought of matter could offer. She turned to Christian Science wholeheartedly for her healing. She procured the services of a Christian Science practitioner and was assisted to the office by a friend, for she could scarcely walk. In the conversation that followed, the practitioner talked to her in terms of God as being divine mind and being ever conscious of her true identity. What God knew her to be was her true being. And what God did not know about her could in no way attach itself to her identity. In the conversation that followed, the practitioner detected that somewhere along the line in this woman's thinking, she had taken offense, which caused her at times to become quite irritated. Oh, she had told no one about it, seemingly had covered it quite well with what would be called a pleasant sense of human personality. Again, thoughts were turned to God as divine love, wherein there could be no offense taken, and man, as love's reflection, could never become irritated. Christian Science treatment were taken up for the woman, which is Christian Science prayer, realizing perfect God and perfect man. She showed remarkable recovery. And in a short time, the healing took place, completely so. Her body had resumed normal, yes, even unusually graceful proportions. She was also healed of smoking, social drinking, and the wearing of thick glasses. Here again is concrete evidence that spiritual power supersedes material sense testimony. This healing power of God revealed through the Christ truth is available to all right here, right now. Christian Science has been given to the world by Mary Baker Eddy through the textbook Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Mrs. Eddy came from a very humble home where strict adherence to religion and high morals was practiced. She writes about this in her book Retrospection and Introspection. My childhood's home I remember as one with the open hand. The needy were ever welcome, and to the clergy were accorded special household privileges. From childhood on, Mrs. Eddy had been taught to turn to the Bible, not only in times of distress, but also for spiritual enlightenment. And this she did. The Bible was her sole guide at all times. Later on, Mrs. Eddy encountered many difficult trials and difficulties. But she always had clung steadfastly to her Bible as her sole guide. Later, when she wrote Science and Health, she included a statement that could be aptly applied to her earlier experiences. She writes, "Every trial of our faith in God makes us stronger. The more difficult seems the material condition to be overcome by spirit, the stronger should be our faith and the purer our love." Mrs. Eddy met with a very serious accident. The doctors who attended her said that she would never recover. Again, in this dark hour, she turned to her Bible. She opened to the 9th chapter of Matthew, wherein is recorded Jesus' healing of the palsied man. In reading this account at that time, she caught a clear glimpse of the Christ and realized that the Christ had lost none of its healing power, but was ever available to all who would turn to it. She found herself suddenly well. She rose from her bed, dressed herself, and joined other members of the household, much to their astonishment. She realized from that time on, much more work had to be done in searching the scriptures for a clearer concept of this healing Christ so that she could impart it for all mankind to be blessed. She writes about this in Science and Health. "For 3 years after my discovery, I sought the solution of this problem of mind healing, searched the scriptures, and read little else, kept aloof from society, and devoted time and energies to discovering a positive rule. I knew the principle of all harmonious mind action to be God, and that cures were produced in primitive Christian healing by holy, uplifting faith. But I must know the science of this healing. And I won my way to absolute conclusions through divine revelation, reason, and demonstration." Christian Science is not Mrs. Eddy's invention. It is her discovery. Her discovery of primitive Christianity. Now, primitive Christianity is that which was practiced by those in the Bible who had turned to the one God through his healing Christ, truth. And for this, we regard Mrs. Eddy as the discoverer of Christian Science. She realized, too, that more work had to be done in order to found her church and its various activities, including the church manual, the bylaws therein governing all of the church's actions. Today, in most parts of the civilized world, may be found the churches of Christ, scientists, where the inspired word of the Bible may be heard, together with its spiritual interpretation from Science and Health, which indeed He is blessing all mankind. And for this, we regard Mrs. Eddy as the founder of Christian Science. We recognize her, too, as the leader. Not in any personal way, but we are led through her divinely inspired writings. And today, there are those in the world, in other fields of activity, medicine, physical science, who are being led to her writings, for hardly a day goes by where some thought isn't being voiced, reaching for something higher than matter can offer. To those who are in need of added help, they may refer to the Christian Science Journal, wherein are listed the names of practitioners. These loyal and vigilant workers who are ready to assist those in need of help and to impart spiritual enlightenment. Christian Science promotes progress. I think it would be generally admitted that the overcoming of material limitations promotes mankind's progress and enables them to do greater things. Jesus proved that a clear concept of God as infinite spirit enables one to triumph over all material limitations. It shows us how to put in demonstration the infinite capabilities man expresses as the Son of God. It gets at the mental cause of all limitations and proves that all things are possible to God. It reveals the allness of God, infinite truth, and demonstrates man's inseparability from Him. Christian Science challenges any thought opposed to truth. It demonstrates the harmony of man's being at one with the Supreme Being. Right here, right now, Christian Science heals sickness by revealing God to be infinite divine love, which tolerates no sickness, pain, or fatigue, but bestows upon man all that is rightfully his, resulting in good health, harmony, and strength. Christian Science heals sin by proving that there is no actual satisfaction in material sensation. It reveals God to be infinite spirit, divine soul, wherein man finds everlasting satisfaction, or in Bible terminology, in Him we live and move and have our being. The businessman turns to Christian Science, realizing that in order to promote progress in regard to his particular enterprise, he must gain clearer concepts of divine principle. Now, divine principle does not originate in human consciousness, but human consciousness is always elevated and benefited through higher concepts of divine principle. As the businessman realizes this and then adheres to its laws, he finds progress taking place. College student turns to Christian Science, realizing that he must gain clearer concepts of right ideas. Again, right ideas do not originate in human consciousness. Right ideas emanate from God, divine mind. As the student recognizes this and then yields to these laws, he finds progress taking place, not only when applied to his particular academics, but athletics as well, football, baseball, social activities, or anything legitimate upon the campus. Christian Science is available to all in regard to any human problem or negativity. The healing power of God is ever present, as revealed through the Christ, God's living truth, right here, right now. Christian Science proves that error is without principle. Every science seeks to distinguish truth from error, and this Christian Science achieves. We know that anything that is real must have something to support it, such as law or principle. No one can prove an error to be true because there is no law supporting an error. An error is nothing more or less than a mistake about a truth. A truth can always be known, but no one can know an error. No, not in any field of activity can an error be known. One may believe in an error or have faith in it, but no one can actually know an error. Nothing but the truth can be known. In arithmetic, for example, no one can actually know that 2 plus 2 equals 5, or 3, or anything but the right answer. We can know the truth, and in that degree do we detect the error to destroy it. Christian Science teaches us to believe only in that which we can know. When we can know it, then we can prove it. I'm quite sure that in all of our educational programs, we have never been taught to believe the chalk marks on the blackboard unless they coincided with the principle or law that was supporting that particular subject or study. So it is in our daily living not to take the material sense testimony at face value, but to turn to the one God, the one mind, as the Christ truth reveals him to be, and then be governed accordingly. This is what the Master always did. He didn't accept any adversity as being real. He always destroyed it. Mrs. Eddy talks about this in Science and Health. Jesus beheld in science the perfect man who appeared to him where sinning mortal man appears to mortals. In this perfect man, the Savior saw God's own likeness. And this correct view of man healed the sick. It is necessary to deny error at every turn, but this can never be done unless we first acquaint ourselves with the truth. Again, not to accept the material sense testimony, but to turn to the one source of all creation. And that is divine mind. Paul writes about this. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Christian Science reveals God to be infinite, divine truth, and this truth to be the sole authority, and demands a radical reliance upon this truth without compromise, not even the slightest compromise. Again, where would we be in mathematics if we attempted to compromise with the principle in order to make the work more easy or to take a shortcut? We know reasonably well the right answer could never be honestly obtained. And so it is with our thoughts to God. We must lean upon Him wholeheartedly, without compromise. Sometimes we hear these expressions from friends who are working out a problem in Christian Science. I know that God is divine mind, and I'm mind's perfect idea, but I just don't get my help. But watch it. Sometimes we hear this one. God is divine love, and divine love is ever present. And I'm love's perfect reflection. Why can't I get my healing? Why? Questioning the very truth previously voiced. Be ever alert to detect those buts and those whys, and refrain from allowing them to come into consciousness. Where would we be in arithmetic if we declared that 3 plus 3 equals 6 and then exclaimed, but why can't I have it? We know that we have it when we yield to the truth. So it is with our thoughts to God. When we make declarations of perfect God and perfect man, then yield to this truth without compromise. In Bible language, keep thine eye single in the measure that we rely upon God. The healing will result. Mrs. Eddy writes about this in the textbook. Hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thoughts. Christian Science reveals God to be infinite, divine love, which alone is the liberator from all error, from sickness, fear, lack, hatred, or any other human negativity, and bestows upon man all that is rightfully his, resulting in joy, good health, harmony, supply, peace, and all that is good, right here, right now. Without an understanding of this love divine, we can never heal in Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy writes in the textbook, the tender word and Christian encouragement of an invalid, pitiful patience with his fears, and the removal of them are better than hecatombs of gushing theories, stereotyped borrowed speeches, the dueling of arguments, which are but so many parodies on legitimate Christian science, aflame with divine love. This love divine is revealed to us through the Christ truth right here, right now.